and welcome to Divination, Episode 11. Divination is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and our topic for this episode is how to filter out problem clients. This was a topic that I saw come up in the blog comments over at eleganttheme.com after we published a post called Four Essential Pages That You Forgot to Include on Your Website. It was written by one of our writers, Joe Filan. One of those pages was called Who You Don't Work With or Who You Don't Want to Work With. And the idea seemed to resonate with a lot of people, but they were hesitant to implement it on their site without seeing a good example of it first. This was actually right about the time that I met our guest host for this episode, Leslie Bernal. Leslie is a web designer living and working out of Texas under the moniker A Girl and Her Mac. She has just such a section on her website, and she was kind enough to tell me all about it. We also talk about how to promote yourself, recovering from a hacked website, useful Chrome extensions, and a whole lot more. Here's our conversation. Leslie, welcome to Divination.
Hi.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It is morning for you, right?
It is, and I've got my coffee. I'm ready. It's about nine something here in Texas. So.
Oh yeah, okay, Texas. I almost forgot. So what's been going on in your world lately?
Busy, honestly, pretty busy, which is good. I can't complain. Just trying to juggle my projects and life, and yeah, that's about it.
And getting ready for this show.
Yes. A little nerve-wracked, yeah, I'm sure.
I think I threw you a little bit of a curveball. I've done this to a couple other guests, but when I sent the articles over for our first segment this week in WordPress, one of them was a podcast, so you had to listen to it instead of read it. And so a little bit, I think maybe a little bit more of a time commitment. So sorry if that was that threw you off, because I only sent them to you yesterday.
I'm a big audiobook fan, so I'm kind of used to the whole listening while I'm doing stuff. So that was fine. Oh, nice. It's actually reading that I don't usually do.
What kind do you use? Audible?
No, I just use iTunes. I'll download audiobooks. Okay.
Yeah, I'm such a huge audiobook fan. I was listening to an audiobook this morning before we got going. What are you listening to right now?
I like kind of not cheesy, but sort of cheesy mysteries. I love Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. That's by far my favorite.
Oh yeah, those are great.
Nora Roberts, like, type things. Or Serial. I got really hooked on Serial.
Oh, yeah, me too. I just recently, I don't know, I'm not actually traditionally a huge historical fiction fan, but I got totally hooked on a set of books and this author. You ever heard of Ken Follett?
I have not, no.
Yeah, he does these historical fictions that are really in-depth and crazy. He did this one called The Century Trilogy, and it was 100 years of world history. The First World War, Second World War, and the Cold War. It was insane. Like, yeah. But it was like really fascinating because he like creates these fictional families that he follows, and he weaves them into the lives of like the movers and shakers of the rest of the world, so that they're always, you know, on the periphery of the action on the global scale. It's really, really fascinating.
I'll have to
really
look
fun.
It up, because I'm always looking for new things to listen to.
So yeah, I'm always listening to books too. Do you want to just jump into This Week in WordPress and we'll talk about some articles?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
This Week in WordPress, three articles caught my eye. I sent them ahead of time to Leslie so that she could read them and we could talk about them. Article number one, how to promote yourself without coming across as a jerk. So this was actually an episode of the Pro Blogger podcast by Darren Rose. Did you get a chance to listen to this?
I did, yeah. And I'd never heard that podcast before. I really liked him. He spoke really well, and I liked what he was talking about.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time, obviously super established, the founder of ProBlogger.com. And I was really struck by how just apt and on point all of his suggestions were. So like, you know, he talked about how, you know, don't think of self-promotion as self-promotion, I think was his very first point. And he said, think of it as like, you know, how you can add value or how you can serve others. And when you do that and you focus on that, you are promoting your value without promoting yourself. And people take note of that. And it's actually more effective than actual self-promotion, which is really cool.
Yeah, I had written a couple things down that just for myself, just because I found them so interesting. But yeah, I had written down that he, you know, seeing it as more of an exchange of value and not just not just self-promotion and, you know, raving about yourself all the time. But yeah, to make it more of an exchange of services and what you can do for them and things like that. So
what are some of the things that you've done to promote your own work and your own business over the years?
Well, thankfully, I haven't had to do a whole lot of, as far as like marketing or anything like that. I get a lot of referral clients.
Okay.
And the way I started out getting clients was, I guess, what would be the equivalent of a cold call. I would, you know, I'd see businesses just being around my city, mm-hmm. And I'd see a logo that I liked or didn't like, or and I'd go check out their website, and if I thought it sucked, I'd literally just contact them and be like, hey, you know, I'm here, I'm local, I'm in San Antonio, yeah. I saw you haven't updated your site in a while, here's my info if you're ever interested. I mean, I did that several times, and I got really lucky once with hooking up with the owner of a farmer's market. And so I kind of had like a built-in client base with the vendors. So she gave me some work after I redid the farmer's market website, and it kind of snowballed from there.
So. Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's awesome. Were there any other points that he had on his podcast that you thought were really relevant to, you know, either what you do or to what, you know, what you've come across and seen others do?
Yeah, I think my favorite thing he said was to lead with your passion. And I can totally relate to that, because I know that when I just even start talking about design in general, whether it's print or web or color, you know, just any type, when I see a logo or something, I light up, you know, it's like, it's my thing. I love it. I can't even go into a restaurant without critiquing the menu or like, how, you know, what font did they, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, when he said that, that really hit home for me, and I could relate to it. And I really liked that. And, you know, he went on to kind of talk about, connecting on a more human level and not just a client, you know, and employee type of thing, you know, more of just get to know, you know, kind of know on a personal level more so. And I think people really can relate to that better and are more inclined to listen to you about whatever project you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's jump to article number 2, how I cleaned up my WordPress site after it was hacked and blacklisted. This was an article published on WPMUdev.org by Jenny McKinnon. And she basically just tells kind of the story of her hack. And I think most of us in the WordPress world have a story of being hacked. I know I do. Actually, funny story, that was my very first blog post for Elegant Themes was what to do when you've been hacked. And I told the story of one of my hacks that actually is, I think, my only hack that happened to me. And yeah, it's scary. Have you had it?
I have. And I was kind of surprised when you sent that article, because I was like, how did he know? I have early on when I wasn't in any Facebook DV groups. I didn't really follow the blog on ET, on Elegant Themes or anything like that. It was just me by myself. I didn't know any of the designers that were doing what I did. No colleagues or anything like that from college or anything. And so I didn't put security plugins on probably a good handful of my first sites that I did. And it wasn't that I knew I should have and I just didn't. I just didn't even realize you're supposed to do that. I didn't know about hacking. I didn't know the vulnerabilities, how that people really set out to screw up your website. I really didn't know that happened. And I got hacked, and it hit about 5 of my sites, mine including 5 clients. It was a nightmare. It was a total nightmare. I was so embarrassed to have to, you know, the emails that have to go out. And then, you know, I wasn't sure how to clean it up. How would I get their work back? I also wasn't doing regular backups. So I was like doubly screwed. And I basically, in the end, ended up recreating all of them. And to tell you the truth, I didn't even charge them. I felt like such an ass. I was like, give me a month. Let me get your sites back up. And then I had to do mine. I couldn't get work that whole time. My site was down. So I learned so much. I did a lot of research after that. Yeah. It was like a crash course in learning how I was supposed to set everything up in the back end.
Oh, I bet. The same thing happened to me. Thankfully, I was at the very beginning of... Well, yeah, I just started taking clients because I'd been doing blogging work and I was kind of transitioning into doing some web design and web work for people setting up their WordPress sites. And I was so new to it that I made this exact same mistake and I got, you know, it was just a script that someone had, you know, an automated script that would go through, like it would infiltrate the host and then it would just go right down the line and replace the WP config file on all of your sites so that you lost But, well, you didn't lose anything if you had your WP config file. You just replace it, take, you know, hunt through all of your files. What I ended up having to do was hunt through all my files on FTP, find anything and everything that's suspicious. And I had all these articles pulled up on how to spot suspicious things, where do hackers hide back doors, blah, blah, blah. And I had to go through all this, you know, trouble to hunt those files down and delete things and reinstall things. And it was a nightmare. Yeah. It took forever. And again, I felt so embarrassed because the night that it happened, I was getting ready to get my first big client, and we had just had a phone call that day, and he was like, "Oh, I'll check out your website tonight." You know, because I had told him, I was like, "Well, have a whole bunch of examples of my work on my website," because it was a referral. And I was like, "You can go there and just kind of, you can see for yourself what I've been working on." Well, he goes there, and the homepage has been replaced with this just god awful text of like,
"Oh my God.
You are the bitch of, you know, X hacker group." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh.
Oh wow, we left you a message."
That's funny. And it was like in broken part. Yeah, it was horrible. It was like in broken English with it was so bad. Yeah, it was like the equivalent of, I don't know if you've ever played video games on like Xbox Live and gotten like cussed out by a 13-year-old, but it was the equivalent of that across the front of my webpage. It was not fun. So moral of the story, everybody, it happens to everyone, usually in the very beginning. If you can avoid it by just learning from everybody else who's gone through it, you're going to be ahead of the game. Grab, you know, look on elegantthemes.com, look on any reputable blog. They're going to have articles about this because we've all been through it, and just do it. Just get the plugins, get the services, make sure you're protected. All right, let's jump to article number 3. 12 useful Chrome extensions for WordPress users. This was published on CodeGeeks, and that's geeks with a Z.com. It was by Gavin, and I don't know. I mean, it was just pretty straightforward. It's just a list post, but it, you know, reminded me that, you know, I'm a Chrome fan, but I got to say, Chrome's getting a little clunky, if I'm honest. However, I'm just in love with all the extensions. And I was wondering, you know, what are some of the extensions that you use if you use Chrome? Or if maybe you use Firefox, they have add-ons. Does this kind of stuff play a role in your workflow at all?
I am a Chrome user. I love Chrome. I will agree with you, though, that lately when I've been testing sites more on, you know, Safari and Firefox, I noticed Firefox has a pretty damn cool like inspect element like tool similar to Chrome's, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and just the browsing experience on Safari is getting super nice. Like Safari's not as good, I don't think, for like people like us who like to tinker and inspect things. Yeah. But if you're a browser, like an actual just web browser, oh man, Safari's awesome right now.
Yeah, I've been with Chrome for a few years now, ever since I started my business for sure. It's hard to ever switch browsers. I mean, I was Safari years ago and then I switched and I was kind of like, okay, I'll never go back. I looked at this list and I'd never heard of any of these, to be honest with you. So I have not used any of them. And it's kind of funny because the first one I was interested in, WordPress Scanner, I think it was, I guess it's already taken down or something.
Oh, no.
I was like, oh, that sounds cool. But yeah, it's like gone or something.
Oh,
But there's another one. But yeah, so I do use, there's a CSS one that I use, and I just was turned on to that by somebody else in the Facebook Divi group.
What's that one called?
It's called Stylebot. Stylebot, I think it's called. Yeah, I think SJ told me about that one. The screenshot ones. I don't use a lot of extensions as far as developer stuff. I really didn't know. I didn't even know they had them. I didn't know about this list. So I'm probably going to go through more.
This list is, I mean, I can just name some of them off here for everybody. Let's see. We got WordPress website email signature, which adds the latest, like if you're using Gmail, this adds the latest post on your blog to your email signature. It's kind of cool, a little bit of extra exposure. WordPress.com extension, probably not very relevant for our particular audience since we're all self-hosted users. Google Docs to WordPress.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. The WP Scanner, which you said was now taken down, so we can, we don't have to talk about that.
That's the only one, though.
Okay, yeah. WordPress Site Manager, which is kind of just like you can put in the credentials for some of your WordPress sites, and it'll help you manage it just from like a Chrome extension, doing basic updates and things like that, which I think is actually pretty cool. WordPress version check. I think that's interesting. You can, it allows you to check the, whether or not the website you're on is running WordPress and whether or not, or what version of WordPress it's using, which can be kind of useful. Hopefully no one's going to try to use that for malicious means.
Right.
And there's quite a few others here. There's 13 in total. I also don't use any of the ones on this list, though I did think a couple of them were interesting. I use my big Chrome extensions are Awesome Screenshot, Color Picker. I use a Rulers thing.
Color Picker. I love Color Picker.
I use a Ruler tools extension so that I can, you know, if I'm on a website and I like the way they've laid something out or I want to copy their image in a mock-up, I can grab the dimensions of their website or their mock-up and kind of copy it over. I love What Font because I'm always looking around if I find a really good font.
Extension for that?
Yeah. So you can click on this extension and hover over whatever font you're interested in using and it'll tell you the name of that font, which is really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. I love that one. And,
what font is that or what the font or whatever? It's hit and miss.
but that's
cool.
And then, I also use something called Tab Cloud, which is not necessarily it's great for bloggers. So like Tab Cloud basically allows you to open up a bunch of tabs and then you can save that window as a, you know, like say I open up 10 tabs on a specific topic. I can put those all in one window. I can open my Tab Cloud extension and then save, you know, say this is
save all of them.
Yeah, blog post research number one or whatever.
Cool.
And then I can close it and anytime I open Chrome back up again, I can say, hey, you know, what were those like 15 blog posts that I had found on that thing? And I can just go to my Tab Cloud extension. It has a list of all the different saved sessions that I've had there and I can just pull it back up. That way I'm not constantly having like 100 windows open.
That's cool.
So awesome. Well, any other comments you have on this particular topic?
No. Oh, there was one that I did add. Sniffer, WordPress Sniffer. I thought that the name of that one was hilarious. I think it tells you. I think the theme and plugins. I think that a site has or something like that. Yeah, I thought it had a little nose as the icon. I did actually add that one. I haven't used that yet, but I thought that one was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought that was really neat, too. And I would, because sometimes I'm looking at a site and I'm like, oh, I could swear I know that this is this theme, but it's been customized or it's different. So it's always cool. And I think it does the same thing for plugins, too, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, there's sites out there where you can put in the URL, but this would be faster. So
yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that just about does it for this edition of This Week in WordPress. If you're interested in reading the articles we discussed, YouTube viewers, you can check out the video description for links, and everyone else can go to the show notes on our blog. Just go to the community category in the right-hand sidebar of the Elegant Themes blog and look for Divination Episode 11. All right. The next segment of the show is where we get to know our guest host in a bit more detail and pick their brain on this episode's main topic. Our guest today is Leslie Bernal. And our topic is how to filter out problem clients. Let's dive in. So before we get into our main topic, I actually like to get a bit of backstory. So Leslie, can you tell us a bit about, you know, where you come from, what it is you did or, you know, did leading up to working with WordPress? You know, you can do education or any other kind of background information you want to give.
Yeah. I won't go back too far. But basically I was in the, restaurant business service industry for like, about 12 plus years. Everything from waitress to sandwich bitch to manager.
Is that an official title? Sandwich bitch?
pretty much. and that was mostly in Austin, Texas, which I love and miss, and I miss all my friends there. But I was there in Austin. I was very much the, I started college right out of high school, which was in like 94. But then, you know, I took that break that, you know, it's supposed to be like a year long break or whatever. Well, that turned into
12.
it turned into a real off and on, basically, community college here, a class here and there, whatever, slowly racking up credits. I just wasn't really serious about college or anything. And I was making good money and doing what I was doing. And then, finally I just kind of, kind of was like, okay, where am I going? There's only, you know, I'm a manager at a restaurant, but there's only so much, I'm not seeking to own a restaurant. I'm not a cook or a chef. I'm not a restaurateur. So I was like, okay, I need to get back to what I love, which I knew I would wanted to do something creative in a creative industry. I actually had started out as a math major, and I would try to sneak in art classes because my parents were like, we're not paying tuition for an art major. So I was a math major, and I took every fine art class I could take, all the new drawing, all the painting, even ceramics, anything art related I would do. Well, I finally had run out of classes in that area in like the studio art field. So I was like, okay, well, I'll try computers. And back when I started, it was Quark that we were working on. And then so fast forward a few years later, when I decided to go back to school, I moved to San Antonio to live with my family, to not have to pay rent, so I could just go to school full time and be serious.
The classic move.
Yes. And mind you, I'm in my 30s at that time. So yeah.
That's actually not uncommon from guests on the show. Not necessarily that specific, like 30s going back to college, but just I'm in my 30s, I'm in my 40s. I think someone's even in their 50s, and they're like, I just decided I need to do a complete change of direction, and they got into WordPress, and a couple years later, all of a sudden they have this like successful business. So yeah. It's not unheard of. even become bragging rights. I don't know. Right?
But yeah, so I'm still in San Antonio. I enrolled in a college here called University of the Incarnate Word. It's a private 4-year college. So of course they wouldn't take any of my credits. I had to start over.
Valuable art credits though.
I know, but it was kind of a blessing in disguise because there was so much that I didn't know, you know, at that point, have been gone, you know, all those years.
Everything changes so fast. Cause I mean, like the software changes, the gear changes.
I had never touched Adobe. I never touched another program. So, that was all there was now. There was no Quark. I was like, what happened to Quark? Mm-hmm. I started learning InDesign. Illustrator is my favorite. Truth be told, if I can do a brochure or something that's supposed to be done in InDesign, I will do it in Illustrator. I know you're not supposed to, but
I'm a big fan of Illustrator myself as well. I love just working with vector graphics. Yeah, it's so nice.
So I did my 4 years, graduated. It was myself and another friend of mine who were the adult, you know, they call you the adult students. Around graduation time, you know, people were like, basically in the last year, you know, people kind of look for the internships and see what are the plans after graduation. And I didn't apply to any. I was like, you know, I don't want to work at a firm. I don't want a boss. It was basically my thing. I was like, I don't want to be, someone's employee anymore. I was like, I did not intend on doing web. In my major, we had to do web as part of the track, but my main thing was print. So I did learn some web. I knew, you know, learned some coding and CSS and HTML, and we used Dreamweaver. But that wasn't my plan at all. So I was like, web, screw that. I'm not going to code all day. Like, that's not fun. And so I was thinking, okay, well, I'll be a freelance print designer. Like, that's a thing, right? But it's not a thing.
Not anymore anyway.
No. And, I did some brochures, some menu, to-go menus for friends of mine and things like that. But I could not find work. And more, when I would talk to people, they'd be like, well, do you do websites? And I was like, no, I don't. Like, stop asking me.
I am a print designer. Yeah. I am the cream of the crop. I only work on...
But yeah, and so that went on for a couple months. And it took a while to really hit me in the head and be like, you have clients. They're right here. Just not, you're not seeing it.
Nothing like bills to clear your site, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, okay, well, look, let me brush up on. I literally went to my college files, opened up my old sites that I did for college projects. The logo I have now, like with me at the computer, I really have red glasses, and I really do always have my hair in a bun. This is as girly as I get, really. But I was like, I hadn't done that in college. And I was like, well, look, I'm just going to try this. I'm going to, you know, I'll build myself a website. I'll mm-hmm. call myself a girl in her Mac. I can't think of anything else right now. So I'm going to use this logo I did in college. And then I kind of just try to rehash my steps in what I learned in college as far as building websites. And then I don't really remember how I got to Elegant Themes. But Elegant Themes is where I learned about WordPress. Mm. I don't remember. I honestly just don't know how I got there. But I was like, WordPress? So I was like, I think I did have a blog at some point. You know, everybody starts a blog and then you have that first, you know, default post. And then sometimes you don't touch it again.
So the first iteration, just to be clear, the first iteration of your website, and I'm guessing your client websites, wasn't on WordPress. You were doing just straight HTML and CSS?
Just regular HTML. Yeah. Yeah, it was a restaurant website, and not great. I filled
it. Not great, just HTML.
I filled it with illustrations because that was still what I really.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so I did all these food related illustrations, and I was like, okay, it may not be a cool website, but I'll knock them out with my graphics.
Right,
and,
right.
So you know, it kind of helped, but
it's actually kind of surprising how much difference. Just some nice illustrations or some nice images can make even on a basic site. It's kind of mind blowing. But then you found WordPress because of what? Were just client demands or your own desire to have more functionality or flexibility or?
I just realized there were limits on what I could do as far as stability really in building websites. Okay. Since it wasn't really what I learned, I fixated on in college. I didn't learn a whole lot about. Setting things up right. I didn't know a lot about security, and I knew that there had to be. I couldn't offer a product that wasn't bare minimum, you know, stable with the right type of code, you know, current code, things like that. And so that's kind of what led me to WordPress. I was like, okay, well, this is a foundation that I can work on. I can at least build upon it. I think the first theme I used, I want to say, is Chameleon, and I did a skincare website, which is actually still up, and she's still my esthetician, and we're still talking. I still do updates for her. But yeah, Chameleon was the first theme I used, and my first she had a site that was done in HTML, so it was my first time moving something over to WordPress too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and it kind of went from there. I stuck with Elegant Themes for a long time. I didn't even look at any other studio or anything like that. Because, I mean, y'all have so many anyway. So, you know, there was plenty to choose from. And yeah, it just kind of built from there. Through her, I got her son became a client, and then referrals. And it just kind of went from there. Yeah.
So before we jump into the main topic, I just wanted to revisit one thing, and 'cause this was a topic that we brought up in our pre-interview, and it was something I noticed looking through your portfolio. You know, as someone who, you know, you saw the light, you figured out that print design wasn't really something that was going to pay the bills, and you transitioned to web design, but you do have that sort of print background and the design sensibilities that come with that, which is more of like a classical approach design, more principle based than a lot of web design. Because I think a lot of web design today is based on like either features or trends or whatever. And so people are like, well, if I just have these elements in there somewhere, I'm doing the right thing. But people who have more like actual design training, and particularly when they started around the time that maybe you or I did, they, that meant like, you know, design principles and starting from the very basic mm-hmm. core foundation. So what, can you kind of speak to how those principles have carried over into the work that you do now from your early days?
Yeah. In fact, I mean, I can't imagine, I know not everybody is, you know, whether it's about money for college or whatever the reason is, I know everybody doesn't get to have maybe a design background, but I can't imagine not having it and doing this. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see a struggle there, but I mean, basically things that you learn are like the grid, the visual grid that you have to have, hues in color. You know, you don't want to put three colors on a site and they're all the same hue and there's no contrast. Mm. Things like, cursive fonts in all caps, like, you know, I mean, those are, they're basic things that you learn, whether in like I guess they call it like the basics of graphic design. And you know, things like consistency. I try to just, I don't ever like really plan, like, okay, hey, I need to make sure I use this principle or this principle. It's just something that, you know, it's in your mindset.
You've done it. You've drilled it so much that it just kind of comes out.
And I think the hardest part actually of all of it is when you need to pull back, because even I will find myself, okay, well, oh man, I found that cool feature. I know this, you know, it's in line with what I'm doing. It's consistent with my layout, but I've already got all this going on. Like, I need to save that for a site. And so I think editing is a big thing too.
Simplification and just making sure you stick to, I think we've talked about this in other episodes, is just, you know, you want to make sure that you're designing to an objective and you're not designing for aesthetic whim, basically. Yeah. Like, cause there's always going to be something visually that interesting that you could try, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the site's going to function better or achieve its goal any more efficiently or effectively. And so when you can find that balance between function and aesthetic appeal, then I think you're going to be on the right path.
Yeah. Well, and there's two things that I always end up, not always, but I usually end up saying to my clients. One is, if everything stands out, then nothing stands out, because there are always going to be people who are like, okay, I want to make sure I have this here and make sure in the sidebar has this and this, you know, bright here, bright there. And I was like, okay, well, now it's all coming at me. So stand out. And the other thing I like to say is that, and sometimes they'll laugh about this, but I'll say, you know, your website isn't for you. You know, it's for your customer who you're trying to get. So because you like hot pink and, you know, you really want to throw in some hearts, like, that's not, has nothing to do with your business. Yeah.
This isn't your MySpace page. This is your business page.
Yeah. And the reality of it is, I think, is that most of the times when I'm done with the website, you really shouldn't, unless it's like a blog, you really shouldn't have to go back a lot. You know, it should be there. It should stay the same. Don't want to change it every month.
Think somewhere I read, you know, that just as a general guideline is like, you know, maybe do a major overhaul every 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Otherwise just minor changes and updates.
Yeah. I think mine is coming up on that time. But yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think, you know, trying to stick to we started talking about design principles, and I think I veered a little bit.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, let's start to shift our conversation towards the main topic, which is how to filter out problem clients. Because right now, you know, you've been through your journey. You started off turning clients away because you didn't know what you wanted to offer. Then you figured out what you wanted to offer. And now you've got, you know, plenty of clients. And I wanted to pick this topic because it's something that came up on the blog, actually, on the Elegant Themes blog. One of our writers, Joe Filan, wrote a post called 4 Essential Pages That You Forgot to Include on Your Website. And one of them was called Who You Don't Work With. And there seemed to be a lot of back and forth in the comments about whether or not that was actually necessary. But actually, most people were interested in just finding some examples because, like, you know, actually, I think I might need to add something like that to my site, but I don't really know how to go about it tactfully, and I don't really know about how to present it. But when I was reviewing your site, I noticed you basically do this exact thing. You just use your FAQ section as like a sort of filtering process. Like, you know, read these 5 or 6 things and you'll know by the time you get to the end of it whether or not we should work together. So it seemed like it was a good fit to talk about this with you. Before we go into the exact filtering process, though, it kind of occurred to me that when you're trying to filter out problem clients, you almost need to figure out who your ideal client is first. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would definitely. And there's, you know, there's several, like, I don't want to say criteria. It's hard because everything's a case by case. But
yeah, well, I was going to ask, what is your ideal client and how did you figure out what that looked like? Because we can't speak for everybody, but you could at least talk about what works for you and how you came to that conclusion.
Well, for me, the foremost is trust. You gotta trust my skills and you have to let me do my job. Mm-hmm. And you know, as far as the FAQ, I think when I first started my website, I always had an FAQ. There wasn't ever a bad experience that led me to be like, hey, I need to put this on here. It wasn't like that or anything. I just knew that I know me and I know the type of people I'm probably not going to be well working with. And you know, I kind of, when I first started writing it, I thought, okay, well, maybe this sounds too abrasive. You know, my boyfriend was like, you kind of sound like a bitch. And like, and I was like, well, it's not that I'm not trying, of course, not, I don't want to come off like that, but I do want to set the tone that, look, I know what I'm doing. If you trust me, we'll work out. But, you know.
No, I love it. I mean, I love how you lead in. You're like, your first one is when you say about, it's just about me. And it says, let me be upfront here. I'm not a super guru developer, but I am a great designer. And, you know, this is what my background is. I went to school for this. You know, like I have, you know, I've honed these skills over years with education and mentorship and all these things. And, you know, you're going to have to be on board with the fact that I'm making some design decisions here and you're going to need to trust me. Ironically, we just had an episode not too long ago with, Nathan Duvall talking about customer care and how, you know, his approach is to just listen to people and not insert, hey, I'm the expert here. But I would say there needs to be a balance. I mean, I agree with him that you know, a lot of people want to be listened to and they want to know that their input's being taken seriously. But at the same time, you know, you can really weed out a lot of potential nightmare or just frustrating clients when you say, just so we're on the same page here, like this isn't a you constantly second guessing, you know, my design choices, you know, like we're going to go back and forth. We're going to figure out what's going on here, but we got to know that I need to know that you trust me to do my job and we're not going to go through like 100 revisions before you're happy and I'm insane.
No, and there's definitely a point, you know, when it comes to the point of them telling me who their ideal, you know, who's their customer, who's their client, who's their visitor. And when we get to that, I certainly open up my ears. I don't know their business any better than they do. So certainly for that, I have to shut up and listen and, you know, give them the floor. But yeah, and I think even not just about design, you know, find out if we are compatible just like on a human level, like how do they talk to me? Are they talking down to me? Am I their slave? You know, are you know, how is the tone in email? Is it like, okay, I need this now. And they just hired, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of just kind of trial, kind of playing by ear, I guess, you know, when you first get a potential client. And see
what are some red flags? I mean, you just named a few, but like if you had a list of red flags that you keep an eye out for, what would some of those be?
Certainly if in our first chat, like if I don't get a word in edgewise, or if they don't even ask me what my skills are, or if they don't ask me, what are my ideas about what, you know, or is there anything I can bring to the table to help them kind of see where their site should be going? If they tell me they're somewhat of a designer or they have a good eye for design, or, you know, they've kind of, I think I put on my FAQ, like if they've dabbled in web design, it's not going to work. I'm not going to co-design.
Right.
You know, if by all means, if you want to build your own site with Wix and then come back to me after it sucks, then fine. But it's just, you know, I mean, I really am here to help, but you have to let me help you, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally can relate to that. So what happens when you get that ideal client? What is, cause I'd like to contrast maybe a bad experience with a good experience. So like when you line up with somebody who's hitting all the right notes and you guys decide to work together, what does that working relationship look like from the time that they contact you to like the time that you hand off the website?
I actually have a client right now who, in fact, the other day she told me she hired me because of my FAQ, because she wanted to, she wanted the guidance and she didn't want to make the wrong decisions. She had told me when she first emailed me, she said that she was going to try to do it herself and realized it was just, beyond her skills and beyond really, she didn't have I mean, she wasn't able to put her vision, you know, on a website.
I mean, confidence is appealing, right? I mean, people want to know that if they're hiring you to be a designer, you're confident in your ability to design, you know, because I think maybe some people don't want to be, you know, that kind of annoying nightmare client, but they're not, they're not confident that you know what you're doing, but you're just in their price range or something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, she's pretty ideal. I mean, she gives me her thoughts and tells me, okay, this is what I really need. I've seen this elsewhere. And is there any way we can incorporate it? What do you think? That's kind of more of what it is what do you kind of a exchange of what do you think? And I'll ask her, I was like, okay, well I did this. So go ahead and take a look. Tell me your thoughts. And it's more of like an exchange of ideas as instead of, instead of like a boss and a you know, like a, an employee and a client, really. Yeah. I mean,
I think a lot of the other guests on the show, we've talked about how, you know, they found success when the balance they strike with their clients is a partnership and not a employer employee type relationship. It's more of a, you know, they're not taking marching orders, they're collaborating, you know. And I think that's a really good balance to strike. So now let's talk about, okay, so you've given a few, like, you know, general anecdotes, but nothing specific. What is that ideal experience of collaboration? What does that contrast with, you know, so a negative experience or a nightmare experience with a client? Do you have a story? I feel like we all got a story. You got to have one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I have one that sticks out.
You don't have to share any names, obviously.
No,
but.
No, I won't. I have one, and it was the only, I guess, bad experience I could say. We ended up parting ways. I even gave back some of the deposit, which I don't normally do. Hmm. It was one of those, look, just here, like, I can't deal with this. And it was the first and last time that's ever happened. But she, it was funnily enough, the basic design stuff, like logo at the top, not contrasting fonts, like don't put cursive in all caps. Those little things that you just are no-nos, she wanted. And I was like, I can't put my name on that. Like, I can't, like, your logo has to be up there. And she was like, no, just stick it at the bottom. I don't really like it. But she didn't want to pay for a new one. And I was like, okay, well, can we put your name, the name of your business? Like, mm-hmm. something has to tell me where I'm at. And she was like, no, just make it like this site. And she showed me a site. It was bad. You know, I don't ever say that. A lot of clients tell me, like, I really love this and it's not that great. And I don't ever say it's not. I'll just say, like, my line is, I can do much better than that. So, but it was more of like, make my site look like this. And it wasn't good. It was almost felt like a bit of just taking somebody else's work and calling it mine. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I don't, it's not going to work for us. We're not on the same page here.
So how do you extricate yourself from that situation? You said you ended up having to part ways. What did that look
like? Well, I mean, we got on the phone and I was like, this is not how I work. You know, you're asking me to do things that just on a basic design level, I cannot do in good faith as a designer. I can't put my name on this site. I wouldn't want to promote it. I was like, if you can trust me, there was a step kind of going through this. It wasn't just immediate.
Yeah. You didn't call her up and say, you know, this strike one, you're out, you know?
No, I asked a few times, like, look, if you could just let me come up with something, let me tell you why this can't happen here and why this can't go there. But it was, I felt like I was just talking to a wall.
Yeah. So did you have it probably wasn't formalized, but did you have like an escalation process where you're like, okay, we're getting to a point where this is becoming unfeasible?
Yeah. I was just like, you know, we're just too, we're just not on the same page with the design and I can't continue with it. And I was like, I said, look, I don't normally do the full refund back. And I was like, I wasn't sure if the money was a big concern for her. Honestly, I don't think it was, but I felt better giving her some of her money back. Cause at that point I didn't feel like I'd done a lot.
So it seems like obviously your concerns so far and on your FAQ are mostly about design and the process of design and making sure that you can just get on the same page with people in that sense. There are other types of problem clients though. Like for instance, you could have someone who lines up with you across the board on ideology or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And yet, you know, they're impossible to deal with on the financial side, or you can just never get a hold of them. You know, have you run into those problems as well?
Definitely getting content can be an issue. A lot of times in the beginning, clients are very gung-ho of like, yes, I'll get you the text, the photos, mm-hmm. all this. And then weeks go by and I don't, you know, hear from them. And in that time I may have picked up some work. So now they're kind of on the back burner. But then when they get it to me, they're kind of expected, okay, well now I have it. You know, how many, 24 hours, 48 hours, what are we talking here? And I'm like, wait a second, you know, now I need to reconfigure my whole plate here. But I think a lot of people go in with good intentions, of course. I'm sure, you know, they need to get me all this stuff, but they don't realize if they have to grab from here and they need this person to get them this, there's time is definitely an issue in getting everything together. As far as like things like payment, I've never not been paid. I've had to chase a few people down and send the reminder through PayPal a couple times, but nothing major, nothing big.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, I mean, it looks like we're getting to the end of our time limit for the interview, which means it's time for us to do a parting thought. I like to end each interview by asking our guests to kind of sum up their thoughts or to make a closing point on the main topic. And today we've been talking about how to filter out problem clients. And I think you've given some good advice on how you deal with problem clients, how you spot problem clients. And we're sort of just talking about how to extricate, you know, yourself from those problem situations to move forward. Is there anything that you would want to close off as far as, you know, what people can do that want to start down this path, what they can do today to maybe begin the process of filtering out some of these problems that they might be having, whether it's clients who aren't going to listen or collaborate well, clients who may or may not be responsive for content, clients who may not be, you know, responsive or timely with payment. Anything along those lines, is there anything that you would recommend people do to start getting, I guess, just a higher caliber or a more cooperative class of client?
I guess I would just suggest, you know, maybe not, I don't want to say like hound clients or anything for like that, but I definitely think I don't contact them enough as I probably should.
So you know, frequent touch, you know, just talk, more communication.
Stay in communication, know what's going on. Sometimes it could be something personal in their life. That happens a lot. Life happens.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times it's got nothing to do with the website, just something is going on in their life. I think just frequent communication, you know, I kind of, with the whole not knowing about security, not knowing about all that, I also didn't know a lot about contracts, you know, learn in the beginning about contracts, as well as all the security plugins, all the backup stuff you're supposed to do.
Set expectations up front.
Yeah. And I think a big thing also is price. I am one of the, I've just now have, after 3 years in, I'm raising my prices. I never have. I started out very low because I knew I was new to the game. I knew there was a lot I didn't know.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel right charging, you know, probably what a lot of designers do. So I know I'm on the low, I was on the lower end. So I'm just now kind of getting more to the median range, because I'm more confident in my skills and I've learned a lot. But I think a lot of, people when they go in, and I get a lot of emails actually from that customer spotlight, on ET.
Oh, yeah, great.
I get a lot of emails from people asking like, how did you start? And, you know, how did you get clients and what about your pricing and things like that? And they're all just like I was like, I can't charge that much. but I think you can charge that much. You just need to be confident about it and make sure you're doing everything right as far as, just the basic, you know, setup and things like that. I mean, there's a lot, you know, to learn in the beginning, but I think if there's plenty of resources, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you mind if I summarize just to wrap up?
Yeah.
All right. So, and correct me if I'm wrong. So in summary, you know, for everybody looking to start to narrow down and add some filters to their client process, you're going to want to be clear about who you are and how you work up front and set your prices, so that you're actually getting people who are serious about design and serious about hiring you for your skills and not just for something they can get out of you for cheap. And make sure that you're communicating often and getting a feel for your client all the way through the process. And I guess at the very beginning, in addition to being clear about who you are and what you are, also be clear about the terms, whether that's a formal contract, which we would recommend, or or just stating in clear detail in all of your emails and communications and on your website what exactly a project does and does not include. And finally, just, you know, not being afraid to, while still being polite, stand up for yourself and when necessary, extricate yourself from relationships that have gone toxic. Mm-hmm. Fair enough?
Yeah.
All right, great. I think you gave us a lot to think about, a lot to apply. Leslie, thank you so much for being on Divi Nation.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'd like to extend one more big thank you to Leslie for coming on the show. I'm sure we've all had nightmare clients and would love to avoid pairing up with the wrong person or company in the future. It may not be possible to avoid all bad matches, but I'm sure if you follow the suggestions that we went over in the episode, you'll be well on your way to improving your pool of clients. We've got one more segment left on today's show. It's another edition of Divi Plugin Highlight, something we haven't actually done in a little while. This time around, I'll be sharing a plugin that I noticed on Leslie's site that helps her generate specific quotes for prospective clients based on what they want to hire her for. It's called WP Estimation and Payment Forms Builder. Check it out.
In this edition of Divi Plugin Highlight, I'm going to show you a plugin called WP Estimation and Payment Forms Builder. As you can see, it's available for $20 here at CodeCanyon.net, which is part of the Envato market. We can see the plugin in action over at agirlandhermacstudio.com, working flawlessly with Divi. This is the website of Leslie Bernal, our guest host for Divi Nation Episode 11. Our main topic of conversation was how to filter out problem clients, and I thought this plugin was a subtle but professional way to do just that. We've all experienced that client call or email exchange in which someone, and sometimes it feels like everyone, wants to nickel and dime us on our rates and question why one thing costs as much as it does, or if they can get this or that for free, and on and on. This plugin will take much of that completely out of the equation by providing an automated quote to those who take the time to go through the form, all without ever having to take a call or manually exchange an email. Leslie has it set up so you can click this quote button right here and get the process started. So let's take a look. As you can see, it starts out with a really simple interface, and I think there's one of the great things about this plugin is you never have to do more than one thing at a time. So it starts out and you see this nice little scale up here, price scale, and you just answer one question at a time and go through. So I'm gonna pick a regular site. And then I can choose features, and I'm just gonna kind of randomly select some. You can see the price gauge going up as I add things. Some of these are free, but some are not. And so you see the price continuing to increase the more features that I choose. All right, let's go to the next step. I'm just gonna pick kind of randomly here so that we can move through. But you could make these steps anything you want. 6 to 10 pages. And just because we've all experienced clients wanting rush projects, let's say complete in less than 30 days. All right, so at the end of the process, we have basically a price that's non-negotiable and a place for people to put their email and click, I'm interested, let's talk. Effectively, this is them agreeing to the price beforehand without you ever having to talk to them on the phone or exchange emails and try to negotiate a price. This will go a long way towards filtering out prospective clients who don't have the necessary budget to work with you in the first place. Okay, well, that is WP Estimation and Payment Forms Builder. I hope that for those of you who give it a try, it helps to build your WordPress and Divi business.
Well, that's all for this edition of Divi Nation. Next week on the podcast, I sit down with Sarah Oates to talk about how she has developed and implemented systems to work smarter, save money, and live better.
Most of it all evolved through mistakes and through errors. When you suddenly realize, oh my gosh, I'm not organized enough and I'm not getting back to my emails enough.
That's all for this episode of Divi Nation. See you next week.